I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the third and final part of the interview with Kevin King. Quite an amazing, strong Amazon seller and a straight talker. Very, very refreshing and lots of incredible depth in the retail field. So the man who knows what he's talking about and is not afraid to tell it like it is. So what's going on in his business this time? We cover what is going to work best in his business and the reason why you need to focus on Amazon, what you need to do to expand off Amazon in some simple ways, some quick ways, how to build a brand for big box retailers, and also what he sees coming in the future. Some very, very interesting predictions that you really need to hear. So listen carefully, folks. Take notes as ever. Listen to the podcast, but also read the show notes at the blog www.amazingfba.com/59, and happy listening.
We're taking a huge amount of your time up here, so I'm aware that you may need to get on with life at some point, but this is amazing stuff. Just coming back out, the sort of zooming back out then from these strategic but ultimately detailed things, what is your bigger picture approach? So what's working best in your business now? And what do you see that your colleagues who actually know their business, as you pointed out, there's a lot of hot air around, but there are people that we privately probably both know that are doing very well. And what do you see them doing that's working for them?
The number one thing is don't get too sidetracked off of Amazon. A lot of people, I do some testing now off of Amazon on Facebook and some Instagram. I use FameBit. I get influencers to do videos for me. I'm about to test some other things. In the beginning, especially when you're just starting, don't worry about anything else but Amazon. Don't worry about Instagram or Facebook or your own website or any of that stuff. It's not important. Amazon is such a huge marketplace and has so much traffic that's ready with their credit card out, ready to swipe it on your product, that you need to maximize there. Once you've got Amazon, you feel that pretty maximized. I mean, I've got some people say you do a product once, you do all this research, and then it's done. All you got to do is sit back and watch the sales, count the money, and call the factory every so often to order more. That's hogwash, because Amazon is constantly changing stuff. My products I launched last August, I'm still reworking them and still reworking them and still fine tuning them to get them just right. And it makes a difference, you know. So it's an ongoing process. So focus on Amazon first, get that maximized to the best that you can, and then worry about going outside and trying to boost your listing with outside traffic or setting up your own Shopify site or any of that kind of stuff.
So to tie in neatly with what you were saying pretty much at the beginning of the podcast, so once you've got yourself optimized on Amazon, so two questions then, there are two ways to go with this. First of all, tell us about optimization, and then let's explore, once you have got it optimized, what you should do to get off Amazon. As you said, it is a risk to just be on one sales channel or marketing channel.
I have a couple of my products that have been featured on some big outside sites that have moved, you know, $10,000, $20,000 in a day. I'm also working at getting into some of the big box retailers right now with some of my products. I have my own Shopify site. It doesn't generate much traffic. I mean, it's a little bit here or there, but it all adds up in the end. I use software like Joe Lister so that anything I put on Amazon gets automatically listed on eBay under my eBay account. So that there are people that do want to pay by PayPal or do want to go to eBay and buy and not to Amazon. So that software automatically takes everything you're selling on Amazon and puts it over to eBay. And so you don't have to do anything. And if someone buys it on eBay, Joe Lister tells Amazon to ship it. So Joe Lister automatically puts a feedback in, gives them the tracking number. It's all 100% automated. That adds, you know, $1,000, $2,000 a month in sales. You know, it's a small amount, but it all adds up in the end. So there's little things like that you can do. I think Joe Lister is free for the first two listings. And then after that, there's $20-$30 a month or something. But you can try it out on your products. It's really good. Saves you time. So there's little things like that. I'm not on Sears or any of the other websites, but I just focus is Amazon. Amazon by itself is greater than the next 10 put together. So unless it's just super automated like this Joe Lister for eBay, I don't mess with any of these outside ones. I have my own brand site, my own shop. I have a Shopify store. It's just legitimacy. So if someone's on Amazon and they're like, I never heard of this product, let me Google it and see what happens. Up comes my Shopify site or my brand site, in some cases my YouTube channel that has, because I get product reviews and I use software like KeepBid, and there's some other ones There's a Firefox plugin that you can use to download your Amazon reviews, the high quality video. And I put those up on a YouTube channel for each brand so that they're there. And, you know, people stumble on them, look at them, they link back to Amazon.
Okay, so fundamentally, you are diversifying your risk by doing these other things, and you're picking up easy sales that don't take a lot of your time and focus off the ball with Joe Lister for the eBay automated listing, which sounds amazing. I have to say that is something I'm going to pretty much do immediately in the next few days after this. So, but fundamentally, your focus is on Amazon because of the sheer power of the sales on Amazon. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, I see Amazon right now as it's a good cash flow source. It's a good way to prove a product. Like, I have several of my products between the first 1,000 and the next order. I make changes. I listen to the feedback and I make changes on them. One, my best selling product that I told you I spent like $30,000 I have the tooling made on. I've sold through the first 10,000 of those, and I'm actually about to come out with a new version, but I'm redoing the tooling and it's costing me an arm and a leg. But this thing has so much profit in it and it sells that I've listened to my customers and I'm fixing all the problems. Going to have a new version come out this fall. So, but that's the version that I will take to the stores, to the electronic stores and to the other places where this particular product should go. I'll pitch it that product because I know that product now is refined. It's in the best way for the customer. I'm going to have the lowest amount of returns because the last thing you want to do is get into a big, you know, Walmart or something and your product sucks. And you end up having 10,000 of them sent back to you because everybody's returning them or they don't want to put them out because they're not selling or whatever.
Yeah, I can imagine just what a size of disaster that would be. So, yeah, I love it. So you're basically using Amazon as a big cash flow machine that, and also it's a great big review / refinement of the actual product machine out of which you'll then go and look at developing your own brand sales by retail.
Correct.
You know, basically being the wholesaler.
That leverages me more, and then if Amazon decides that I'm a bad boy or they don't like me or something happens, I'm not, oh shit, how am I going to pay rent, you know, or whatever. It's you got to do that. I mean, if you want to make this into a full-time job, if you're just doing this as a hobby to make a little extra money on the side, it's not necessary. Just stay on Amazon, have fun, make a little money, have a good vacation. But if you're trying to make a living at this, and my goal is not to turn this into some $200 million company. My goal is to reach 10 million in sales by the end of 2018. And I'll do that. That's my minimum target, but I don't want to grow this into having 20 people working for me and all that kind of stuff. I'll actually stop it before it gets to that point. I'll curtail it back. I've been there and done that. I just want something that has a steady ongoing stream and then maybe I can sell it down the road and move on to something else. Or maybe start this all over again in a different category.
Wow. So you have a big picture thinking, but presumably you've got it in perspective from even bigger picture that you've had before. So you've done with building huge companies and the stress that goes with that.
Yeah, I don't want that. I don't want to. I've been there where I've had 20 people working for me in a big office and the whole nine yards, and I don't want to go there again. I mean, right now it's just me. Farm out a lot of my design and stuff, you know, using Upwork and other places, but I'm pretty much doing it. Most of it. And at some point, I'm going to hire one or two other people. I hire some part-time people now when I have a big shipment or something come in, if I got to redo something, just temporarily, buddies or something. But I don't want to get to where there's a bunch of people. Maybe one or two other people working for me full-time, and that'll be it.
So basically, you're not a big fan of the whole outsourcing too early thing then?
No, not at all. I mean, some people have no choice because they have a full-time job. They don't have a way to do it. They don't come from a background of shipping. It's just confusing and it's a nightmare to them. And so they outsource it. But that adds a lot to your cost. I mean, some of these FBA prep companies can add 50 cents, a dollar, $2 per item just to handle and mess with your stuff. You know, that cuts into your bottom line big time.
No kidding. I mean, definitely if we're UK-based sellers selling in the USA, which I know I did, and I'm beginning to move over to the UK to a degree is my focus for the moment anyway. And a lot of people listening will be in the same boat then. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That takes a huge chunk of cash out. I mean, sometimes it's several hundred dollars for just doing like a little 500 unit order with, you know, maybe something that's a total landed cost of $5 each or something. I mean, it is a crazy, crazy addition to the cost. So it's definitely something to cut out if you can.
Experience that in the reverse. I mean, I'm about to expand to Amazon UK. I should have my VAT paperwork. You guys take a long time to issue VAT numbers.
Sorry about that. Yeah, it's true.
That's applied, I think, in March, 2 months ago. I should be happening any day now. But as soon as I have that VAT number, I'm going to test the waters. And I've heard mixed stories. Some people that come from the States and go to England say it's a nightmare disaster. Others say, no, it's a good way. So I'm going to take one or two of my better selling products that have the higher margin and test it over there and see what happens. Because, I mean, I've been all over England. I've been all over Europe many, many times. I mean, it's very similar cultures. You guys spend money too. I think your actually income in the UK, your percentage of online sales in the UK as a percentage of the total retail sales is higher than US. So you're
not only that, I believe it's the highest in the world, actually, as a percentage, not in absolute terms, of course. The US is much bigger, but as a percentage, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's what, 60, 70 million people that are buying, you know, and it's a very similar culture and very similar product. So I'm gonna test it out. And the advantage to being in the UK is I can then stretch my tentacles a little bit into the rest of Europe until I reach a certain threshold on the VAT. And then I'm going to have to get my own account in Germany and own account in France. But at least by shipping into the UK, people from France and Germany, if they so choose, can actually buy from the UK store and have it shipped over to them. And until I reach, I think it's a, depends by the country, but I think like Germany is like 100,000 euros. Till I reach sales above that, I don't have to set up shop in Germany. So it lets me test the waters a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's very much the strategy that quite a few UK-based sellers that I hang out with also are testing, like store it in the UK, and then until it reaches a certain point, also sell from there to Germany. It seems to be working pretty well for quite a few of us, and that's something that's next on my agenda with a couple of my products as well.
I mean, I have to be careful because the margins have to be there, because some products I'll probably never take to the UK because just the margins out there with price fluctuations and currency exchange, and then I got to add the VAT. But just by default, whatever I sell here is going to cost more there. It is. And so that might not be competitive. I might not be able to compete there because of that. So because I'm paying US dollars for my goods, I'm having to sell them in pounds. And the pound rate right now is actually pretty favorable, but it can fluctuate widely sometimes based on the price of oil and other things. So I could ship 1,000 units in the UK and think I'm going to make this much money. If they don't sell that well, it takes me a year to get rid of them. In the meantime, the pound has gotten stronger against the dollar. I'm taking a hit there just by default. And so you have to be careful on that too. I guess it goes the opposite way for you guys.
Absolutely right. At the moment, it's a very funny business because I don't know if you've heard, but we're having the Brexit, i.e. is Britain going to exit the European Union referendum middle of next month. I think it's 23rd of June. So obviously the pound is getting hammered on the international market. So I don't know. I'm not going to get into the politics of it, but it's, put it this way, it's very unhelpful indeed. So yeah, the pound dollar and the pound euro exchange rates are likely to do some very interesting and quite dramatic changes over the next kind of couple of months, I think. I mean, I should imagine it will get worse until the exit day. And then assuming that we don't exit and stay in the European Union, then I imagine the pounds will bounce back. So that's something to really be aware of.
I saw yesterday the vote right now, the straw opinion is you're leaving.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I've been looking into that. My goodness, how interesting to touch on UK politics in a podcast about Amazon with an American seller. But my gut instinct is that we're going to stay, but by the skin of our teeth. I think it's like an awful lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of emotional arguments in favor of leaving, but I think that the majority of the educator/business community, and of course I live in London, so I guess I live in a bubble, which is, it's more Eurocentric, it's more business oriented, it's more educated than the average in the UK. But I think that the consensus is going to be that actually is going to hit us harder in the wallet, and then people vote with their wallets. I mean, it's also one of those things where people like to say brave sounding things in polls and stuff, but when they actually get to it, they think, oh, it's going to be a bit of a mess, you know. And often people want the devil they know, not the devil they don't. The devil they know is being in the EU since, what, 1973, year of my birth, funnily enough. And then, you know, the devil they don't know is exit. So it's interesting days for sure. Yeah, my money would be on staying in by the skin of our teeth, but don't quote me and don't invest on the basis of that.
Yeah, I'm gonna start slow and see what happens and go from there. But if it works, you know, it'll be a nice extra add to the bottom line.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Kevin, you give us just oodles and oodles of really high-level business thinking. You're such an impressive guy. I mean, really, we've had some big hitters and some impressive people on before, and but you're really totally up there. I mean, it's amazing that you aren't yet one of the sort of gurus out there, maybe because you aren't into selling, shall we say, BS, and you're very straight, shoot from the hip. That's incredibly refreshing. Some amazing stuff. I've got loads of notes, and I'm going to go away and really rethink some fundamental things. So I think that's just the sign of somebody who really knows their stuff. What can listeners do if they want to get hold of you or find out more from you, more of your thoughts, more of your philosophy and strategies?
Well, I've considered consulting, but I don't think I'm going to actually do it. I did a little test about 3 weeks ago where I offered a free 15 minutes, posted on a couple of Facebook groups, and I had people from all over the world, probably had 30, 40 people take me up on it. I just did it over a couple of days and talked to them and looked at their listings and helped them. But I quickly realized that you can either do one or the other. You either got to focus on consulting and make that your focus, or you got to focus on the product. And to me, the consulting is not scalable. So it's something that you can make some extra side money on, but it's not, it's your time. And I can't make money while I'm sleeping consulting, unless I do a course and sell it, you know, people can watch. But that, with the rate that Amazon is changing everything right now, that's going to quickly go out of date. So the Amazon product business is scalable, and that I think I can make a lot more money. So I'm going to devote my time completely to that. I may at some point start a higher level mastermind where people can come in and we talk, or do a big webinar for 4 hours once a week or something where everybody joins in. I may start something like that. But if I do that, that would be the limit to it. So right now there's not a good way to actually get a hold of me. I mean, you can find me on the Facebook groups. I'm in several of the American FBA Facebook groups, Kevin King, K-I-N-G. You'll see me post occasionally in there. Or you can look me up on Facebook, Kevin King in Austin, Texas. Find me that way and send me a message if you want to reach out.
Great. Thank you very much. I know what you mean about the consulting thing not being scalable. I was talking to somebody else who sold their house in the UK and went over to China recently, and he just plunged feet first into it. And he's got a huge background in product designing and stuff and working with suppliers. He's been out in China for several years with his previous job. So yeah, he plunged straight in. And I was saying, you know what, sadly, a lot of us, I'm in that boat, have got to find cash from somewhere. So consulting can be a really excellent way to get cash in, but it is very, very unscalable. I mean, I'm just consulting with beginners at the moment, and I just limit it to about 5 people, maybe 6, because it just doesn't scale, as you say. So long term, the game has got to be Amazon, because like you say, the scalability of the thing is breathtaking. That is one of the most, you know, it's like the 8th wonder of the world, really. So I'm with you on that one.
Now, there's people, I know people, some of the people that develop software, some of the people that do consulting, it's so they can get money to buy more inventory.
Yeah, well, that's very much where I'm at. I'm pouring everything back in because, as you say, and I love your honesty right out of the gate, that, you know, you have to have deep pockets to do Amazon. You know, if you, as you said, exactly. Again, I've seen people, they say, oh, I started off with $1,000 and look at me now, I'm turning $1 million a month over. I'm like, that means you probably have a cash requirement of $250,000 a month. Let's be real about this. So, yeah, cash is king.
They've gotten money. I mean, if you're going to grow it to more than one or two products and to grow it to where you can live off of it, 99 times out of 100, you're going to have some money behind, big money behind you. Or you're going to have a product that you just got lucky, that you're buying it for $1, selling for 20, and it just took off and you're one of the top 100 sellers on Amazon. Right time, right place. That can happen and probably has happened a few times, but it's pretty rare.
Yeah, I think those are the flukes that people kind of hold out as the poster children for certain online courses we won't name. And then you think, yeah, reality, my friends, is really different. So I like the reality check. You're someone who's enormously successful, but very, very honest. And that's a great combination.
I mean, you can do the math on some of these. Some of these guys are selling these $1,000 or $1,500 courses. Do the math on them. Why are they hustling it so hard to sell those courses if their products are not making that money? Why are they doing that? I mean, it's I don't know. I have my doubts.
Yeah, no, I take your point on that, really. I mean, in my case, I'm just to be absolutely transparent with everyone. I'm charging a little bit money for some, you know, consulting with beginners, basically, or people in the early stages, because I don't want to BS about where I can take people. I can't take people to $100,000 a month yet or anything. Hopefully, I'll be there one day. But yeah, and that's because I need the cash into the business. And I'm also looking at finance and just every way I can do to get money into this thing, because I know the thing works. The business model is solid. Now I've got to get the finances going and scale up. So
there's absolutely nothing wrong with that either. And everybody, a lot of the new people, they need help. They need guidance and they need to find someone they can trust. And a lot of people don't have time to listen to, like you said, there's tons of podcasts out there. I mean, I still to this day listen to a lot of them, almost every one of them, just because if I get one nugget out of it, I may listen to an hour podcast and 58 minutes of it bores me to tears. The guy says one thing somewhere and they're like, oh, you know what? I actually knew that, but I just forgot about that. I need to go do that. So I'm an information whore, and I look for information everywhere I can.
I love it. An information whore. It's not an elegant phrase, but it's a striking one. I love it. Maybe that's a kind of Texan style. I like it. Straight from the hip. I love it. So just a couple more questions. I must let you go back to life as we know it, because you've given us so much value. I'm really grateful. I'm sure the listeners will love it as well. So one question is, what do you see coming in terms of changes we should be thinking about adapting to? As you say, repeatedly. And again, I love the reality check here that Amazon changes fast and has changed even over the last 2-3 months in really drastic ways. What do you see coming down the line the rest of 2016, and what about 2017?
I think you're going to see pay-per-click advertising become more expensive because there's going to be more people doing it. Because there's a lot of these bigger brands that aren't doing it now are going to start seeing the value in it. So I think that's going to get a little more expensive in a lot of categories. I think Amazon's going to has a focus, and if they don't have it right now, they're going to really cleaning up the catalog. I think you're going to see a lot more. I mean, they started to do it already with limiting titles and limiting bullet point lengths and stuff. But I think you're going to start seeing more enforcing that, more enforcing the image guidelines where people are putting banners and bursts and stuff on their images and getting away with things. It's just a massive, massive, massive database, you know, so it's really hard to just globally apply a filter and kick everybody out. So it's a very laborious thing, but I think you're going to start seeing that impacting more people. More where they lock the listings, you know, if you're and you can't do updates unless you go through Seller Central on certain things. I think you're going to see that. I think that's going to impact a lot of people right there. And they may grandfather some in, but I think even some of the grandfather people are going to get cleaned up. And right now, Amazon has a part of their problem is private labels are good and bad because you have private label and third-party sellers are more than half of Amazon's product revenue. I mean, Amazon.com, more than half the revenue comes from third-party sellers.
Wow, that's huge. I didn't know it was that big.
Yeah, not their total revenue because they have their Amazon Web Services. You know, it does all the hosting and other things that make a lot of money. But of the Amazon.com product sales, over half is from third-party sellers. So it's a good thing. But at the same time, with all these people doing private label, you have a lot of products that are the exact same thing, just under a different name. Versus in the past, a few years ago, someone comes out with a blue garlic press. The next guy comes out and he lists on top of it. He puts his listing on top of the first blue garlic press, and it sells it, and you have 20 guys selling the same thing, different price points. But now you got 20 guys selling the exact same thing, but 20 different listings, and they're not differentiating. We talked about it earlier. You got to differentiate and make your product truly different. And somehow they're going to have to address that. I don't know what they're going to do, but there may be some new barrier to entry, some new they're trying to do it right now with some of the UPC codes. A lot of people are going out buying UPC codes on eBay and elsewhere because they don't want to pay for the expensive fees that the official government sanctioned site charges. And I think they're going to start cracking down on that.
Which is the government site that people should use?
You can just Google official UPC code USA or something, or it's GC1 is the official body. But it's expensive. And you have to pay an annual recurring fee. And so I think what a lot of people are doing now is they're taking UPC codes off of eBay and it's causing duplicates, and they're creating bundles, putting their own UPC, or they're putting a UPC on top of doing retail arbitrage. And instead of jumping on somebody else's listing, being the 50th guy selling Tide laundry detergent, they're putting it on its own listing with its own UPC and creating it that way. And it's just causing havoc and causing a lot of confusion. So I think they're going to have to crack down on that. And one of the ways is if your UPC doesn't match the database, your brand name or your company name or brand name doesn't match what's registered in the U.S. database, they're going to delist you. That may be, I don't know how they're going to deal with that exactly.
As in delist your company or delist the product?
Delist the products for an invalid UPC. If you bought your UPC from somebody on eBay, you know, that's selling these. Because there's people like me, my UPC code, I bought it like 20 years ago. So I don't have to pay a recurring fee. They changed it, I don't know, 10 years ago or something. I think in 2002 or 14 years ago, they changed it where you have to pay like an annual fee and it costs, you got to buy in, and it can cost $1,000 or something to get a UPC. So I have a five or six digit number. And so I can do as many products as I want. All I do is add five more numbers to the end of it because I have my own unique starting number. So I don't have to pay. I can do a million UPC or whatever the math is. I can do bazillions of UPCs with that number and I don't have to pay a dime. And that's what these people are doing on eBay is they have one of those old school numbers and they're just adding numbers to the end of it and selling them. And I think Amazon's going to start cracking down because you can match that number, that starting number, up to who owns it. And if it doesn't match, they may send you a warning and say, hey, I don't know if they'll delist you, but they may say, hey, your product doesn't match. You got X number of days to fix this, which means if you've got your product in Amazon with UPC number, you have to recall them all and relabel them perhaps if you're not using the ASIN barcode. It could I don't know. There's going to be some of that. They got to clean it up a little bit. And I think they're going to get, I think some of the review services and some of these things are going to start cracking down on more. They already have to one degree, but I think they're going to tighten up the algorithm. They already have. So like the super URLs don't really work, aren't very effective anymore. And some little things like that. And I think you'll see more big brands coming in. I think you're going to start seeing a lot of these big brands that it's how we compete right now. Some of these big brands, they just have a database and they just have some flunky and say, here, make sure our product's on Amazon, make sure it's on Rakuten, make sure it's on buy.com, make sure it's all these places. And they just export a database that just has really cheap, really bad bullet points, really bad images, basic stuff. I think some of these big brands are going to start realizing more that, hey, we could make a lot more money. It's worth hiring a guy for 40 or 50 grand a year that all he does is Amazon for our product line. He goes in here and optimizes all the images and optimizes the listings. And therefore, they're going to be more competitive against us private labelers. I think you're going to see more of that. And that could be a good opportunity for someone that gets into this private labeling and spends their own money, you know, and learns a little bit. And maybe it's not making them the money they want or making the not getting them where they go, but they might be able to then reposition themselves with that experience and go approach a big brand or go approach someone and say, hey, you know, I've sold on Amazon. I know how it works. I know how to optimize. Let me do it for your products. Pay me a percentage or hire me.
Yeah, and that's, by the way, that's a big hint, I think, for anyone who's listening who doesn't have the cash needed to go big time with this, and the cash requirement is very real, that you're not the first person, Kevin, to say that. I mean, like Manuel Beckfire was saying, why not go do that? Will Chernlin was saying that he actually does that. Of course, he does quite a bit of consulting work, I think. So again, it's a way to leverage your skills to get cash into the business, rather than just kind of going, I haven't got enough money, so I can't do it. It's being resourceful with what you got.
So I think that's some of the things that are coming. I don't know when or how, but I think some of this. I don't think this business model is going to go away. I think it's going to become more competitive, and you really got to make sure you stand out, and it's going to take more money to play. I mean, the people that got in 2 years ago, you know, they got in cheap, and they got in with virtually no competition, and a lot of those guys are the ones that are making bank right now because they got in at the right time, and before there was competition, they've established themselves. And so they're doing really well. Most of them are doing really well.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, certainly you can't go back to the old days, but it's good to recognize what phase Amazon's at. And it's certainly, you've flagged up a bunch of things that we've begun to see the sort of hints of. But I love the fact that you're giving us a sort of heads up warning on quite a lot of this stuff, because we're just beginning to see that now.
I don't have any insight on Amazon. So these are just my own personal opinions, and I could be wrong, but
of course, but calling the future is always impossible, but we've got to kind of take a punt on it, haven't we? We've got to at least prepare for the possibilities.
Getting off of Amazon is one of those ways, having another way to sell your product.
Excellent. Well, Kevin, it's been real. I mean, so much detail and also big picture thinking, so much like the underpinning philosophy and calling people on the BS that goes around. Really love it. It's been quite an extraordinary, a conversation to have and to just listen to you and try and absorb all the stuff that you've given us to digest. So do you have any parting words of advice for any listeners who are either getting started or who have maybe a few products live and are now wanting to scale up to the next level?
All I can say is, if you're willing to work hard, you can make money. I mean, I want to see, that's one of the reasons I do these podcasts, is I'm not doing it for any personal money or financial reasons. I just want to help people succeed. And I want to see more people be able to do this and achieve their dreams and succeed. So as long as you're willing to work hard, you got a little bit of money to play with, and you don't get too discouraged if you have a failure, just move on from it, learn from it, and move on. All the best to you.
Kevin, thank you very, very much. Excellent and very comforting words to lead us off.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Michael.
Thanks very much. It's been a great pleasure.
Well, ladies and gents, it's a pleasure to bring you the powerhouse that is Kevin King, and the straight talkingness is fantastic. As I say, it's very refreshing stuff. So lots of great stuff in there. I think particularly what was of interest to me is the expanding off Amazon in simple ways using Joe Lister, and that's a very elegant and simple way to do things. Expanding into the UK and the USA, if you're a USA-based listener, then that's obviously going to be of great interest to you. If you're already UK-based, then getting into Europe makes a lot of sense. That's something I'm going to be personally expanding into over the next couple of months, really. And then his predictions for the future, I think, you know, there's going to be some tightening up of various different things. So we all need to basically do the thing that Kevin has been preaching the whole time, which is be really, really professional and detailed and create fantastic products and offer genuine difference and genuine value to the consumers, which is kind of, you know, news to somebody like Kevin, who's been around for a long time. But for those of us who've been in Amazon for that brief period where you could put any old stuff up and it would sell, that period has come to an end. And you heard it here from the horse's mouth, from a man who knows his stuff. So folks, go and read the show notes if you haven't done already, www.amazingfba.com/59. And in the meantime, if you've got any questions that arise from this or things that have come up in your business completely unrelated to this that you want some help with, pop over to the Facebook group. If you're not already a member, make sure you join. You'll get great value out of that. It's over 360 members now. It's growing all the time. And that's www.amazingfba.com/FBF, as in face, B as in book. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.